With the holiday season approaching, we thought we'd lighten up this month's program. While we spend most of the year dealing with serious topics from wildfires to the political landscape, let's take a few minutes to realize that agriculture can be also filled with a little humor. Welcome to this edition of the Beef Roundtable. I'm Dr. Ron Lemonade, your Beef Extension Specialist at Purdue University, West Lafayette, Indiana.
And I'm Bert Rutherford, Senior Editor of Beef Magazine, and I'm based in Denver, Colorado. Each month, like Ron said, we discuss timely topics that impact the beef industry. Today, however, I think we're in for a treat because we've got two guests who I think are going to make you smile, maybe make you giggle. You might just bust out laughing.
The Beef Roundtable is recorded live and edited to fit the time constraints of the program. The programs are available at Beef Magazine website, iTunes, YouTube.com, as well as BeefRoundtable.com.
Our first guest today is Damian Mason. He's an entertaining and informative speaker with a message for everybody in agriculture. Like many children of ag, he was involved with FFA and was a 10-year 4-H member. Damian has a degree in ag economics from the Purdue University. He also studied comedy writing and improv at the Second City in Chicago. When he's not traveling for work, Damian can be found on his Indiana farm with his wife, Lori, or escaping from the Indiana winters at his home in Arizona.
Our second guest is Tim Moffitt. He's not a politician or a salesman, and he's definitely not a motivational speaker. Tim has been partners for 30 years with his brother in a dairy farm as well as a cow-calf beef operation in Florida. For the last 16 years, Tim has been a stand-up comedian. Tim travels the U.S. and Canada performing stand-up comedy and all types of agricultural-related events, conventions, and county fairs. Tim writes a monthly humorous column in Progressive Dairyman magazine, and his column is rightfully named The Manure Spreader.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Beef Roundtable. Let me throw this question out at you to get things started. As you perform your routines throughout the nation, do you find that you have to change your routine to fit a particular crowd, say dairy or row crop or hogs or beef? Do you have to customize what your routine is?
Damon, you want to go first?
I'm letting you go first.
By the way,
Tim, I think we should open up before we even get into that. There was a time when I went to a Dairy Herd Improvement Association meeting when I was about 9 years old. And the guy that was in charge of the local DHIA chapter got up and he was pretty funny, somewhat gregarious, rolled with stuff off the cuff, kind of a personality. And then the person that was the elected president, he was kind of stiff, didn't really have the gift of gab. And he rolled it right back over to the other guy and said, "Sometimes I just think we ought to understand that great speakers are born or not made. Based on the introductions we just got from Bert and Ron, I think you and I should do most of the talking here today."
Go ahead. That's good, Damian. Seems how one of them went to where you graduated from.
Yeah, and what our guest listeners and viewers missed was that he screwed up three times in the introduction on a three-letter word. So it makes me wonder, it's a good thing they don't make PhDs any longer than three letters because these guys would be screwed. All right, go ahead and take that question, Mr. Moffitt.
Well, sometimes you do have to change the routines a bit. Normally when I'm in Illinois, I have to talk a lot slower. Bert, did you even get that joke? I'm just asking.
Hey, I live in Colorado. The Midwest is foreign country for me.
All right.
By the way, Tim, if you'd have to talk slow in Illinois, Bert had to bring up the easy option for us on Colorado. When you do gigs in Colorado, since they legalize marijuana, you have to talk at like super slow-mo.
Right. They hand out gummy bears beforehand.
Oh, that's little white pills.
This is a family show, so I'm going to keep it at that there, Bert. As far as changing up, I'm in the dairy business. I've got a lot of material that's inside jokes about dairy farming and stuff like that. But as far as changing it up, I mean, farms, farm, agriculture. If you grew up on a dirt road in the middle of a cornfield, it's I don't know, it crosses over pretty well. You know, you just have to change it up. Sometimes if you do a gig where, say, it's a bank versus a bunch of ag people, then you really got a few bunch of knock-knock jokes. I'm sounding like an idiot here, but I'm going to bring this over to Damien.
Here's the thing. A long time ago, I think I learned, and Tim has learned, anybody that's funny has learned, funny is funny. There's going to be various layers. If you've got some stuff that you use in your routine, that it will hit 98% of the time. And that's why it's your go-to stock. I mean, it's just kind of like you watch a football player. You know, Terry Bradshaw once talked about he was really good about he couldn't do some things, but by God, he could back up in that pocket and he could crank that ball to Lynn Swann or John Stallworth. So everybody has their thing that they're amazingly good at, and it becomes your stock material because it hits all the time. Tim has that. I have that. It's probably going to hit in front of – I did on February 14th a few years ago, I did a Greenstone Farm Credit event where they bring in the ladies of ag. The idea is you're probably married to a farmer, you're a farm woman, you're a farmer yourself, or a farmer is the popular word now, but we want to show you a little love. So I got 350 women in that room, and they put me on at 8 a.m. That's a different type of a crowd than if you do a 70% male animal health sales crowd, and they put you on at 8 p.m. after they had their meetings all morning, golfed out in the sun and drank beer all afternoon, then came in and had cocktails and dinner. So you're going to play it a little differently. And I just gave you two examples, but you're looking at regionally somewhat, you know, maybe a little more cowboyish if you're out in the Rockies, and a little more down homespun if you're in South Carolina, and a little bit of different angle up in the Northeast. But in general, Tim and I both do so much agriculture that I'd say that, as he pointed out, he's from a dairy farm background, I'm from a dairy farm background, but the main thing is that there's authenticity. If that crowd knows you are there to talk to them, and you're not just up there reciting lines, it'll be a hit if it's funny. Am I right, Tim?
And another thing, I mean, Damien, it's obvious in this conversation he's the intelligent one. But I was taught early on in my comedy career that you have 7 seconds to bond with the crowd. Now, it might be a stock joke. It might be – I was in Denver 2 weeks ago, and there was a lawnmower parked out front that they were raffling off. And it was for Farm Bureau. And they were raffling out a lawnmower, and it was like Damien said, it was an 8 a.m. breakfast. So the first thing I said was, I don't know which one of y'all got drunk and parked your lawnmower out front, but it took the keys out of it for you. But if you can bond with the crowd right up front, and they realize that you are, especially with ag, because I think in the ag industry, you know, if some guy comes in and he's, I mean, I'm not knocking on other types of entertainment, but if he's a magician or a ventriloquist versus another one of us up on stage, if you bond with them up front, they'll ride the wave with you the whole way. But I've always been taught bond up front, you can get away with whatever you want to the rest of the show. So that's just my take on it. But Damien is right. You know, 8 a.m. breakfast versus an 8 p.m. I call it a bar show, but yeah, you got to change it up a little. You got to be very versatile. So
how do you make your stories interesting? Is it are they real life examples that have sparked your idea of a comedy routine? You know, and do you test your material before you go on stage?
Go ahead, Tim.
You'd like to test it. Sometimes you don't have another choice but to, like, just throw it out there. And most of the time you throw that in the middle of your act just in case it bombs so bad and crickets that you can recover. But, you know, I have a lot of stuff. Most all my stuff is real life. Maybe, you know, it's been hyped up a little bit or exaggerated, but as far as testing it out, it's, you know, sometimes you can test it on people, but, you know, like if I could test something on Bert right now and I don't think he'd smile. He's kind of staring at that paper the whole time.
I think everybody on this call can admit that Bert's a crappy audience. I mean, let's just get that out in the open right now.
You all have been talking to my wife.
but Bert's been in one of my audiences, and I don't know, he's obviously still a fan. He invited me on this thing today. Hey, I'll give you a thought on that. You ask one question and another question. You ask, what makes an interesting story, and do you test your material? First off, interesting is a good example. Going back way back when you're starting out and you're doing open mic nights and you're, you know, working on how to get funny in front of a crowd and all that. And you've always been funny. Tim's a funny guy. It didn't happen because he just started 16 years ago. It happened when he was a kid. Same with me. Funny's funny. And I always say being funny is like being tall. You either are or you are not. And it's going to be obvious by the time you're an adult. People that get up that were voted most likely to be a librarian should not open a speech with being funny because it ain't going to work. They're just not there. Tim's funny, I'm funny, we were funny as kids, and then we decided to work hard at it to make it our job. What makes an interesting story is going to vary a little bit, you know, between different crowds, of course, but there is an authenticity, as I talked about in the previous question. If that crowd thinks that you're talking to them and you're really there in the moment with them, they will come along with you, as Tim pointed out, that there's interest to them in what you're talking about. Now, if you're telling a funny story about loading cows and your wife gets knocked down, which is one of my old stories I don't tell much anymore, but animal ag crowds really like it. My hobby beef operation, my wife and I are in the pen, and you know, she gets knocked down and she's never been around these animals before. You know, I go through this whole buildup. People that are in the animal ag business get it. Ag people get it. And, of course, you would tell that story to a group of golf ball salesmen to your complete detriment because they'd be like, what the hell is he talking about over here? So that's the part of interesting. But we use real-life stuff, as Tim pointed out, much less knock-knock, much less a guy walks into a bar. That's shtick. Stories work, and they're for him and for me. You tell the story about loading cattle with your wife. You've got 9 laughs during that story. And 3 of them probably are punched up. You probably didn't really say afterwards, Lori, why was I unsympathetic when you got knocked down? Because you were about to get kicked in the head by that 1,400-pound Angus steer. And I don't want to do laundry myself for the rest of my life. You know, did I really tell her that I was worried about who's going to do the laundry when she almost got kicked in the head by a steer? No. So that's funny to the audience. And of course, I might have said it a day later when we were drinking beer with your farmer friends telling the story, and that's why it becomes material. So you just said, do you test your material out? You don't want to be one of these guys that's always testing material with your friends drinking beer on the back patio, but there are those times when you have told a story to your friends about loading cattle with your wife. So it's already funny. You already decided you're going to make it into a part of your show, and it already has 3 punchlines. And before it ever became part of the show, you relayed the story to 3 of your buddies over a beer, and you punched it up and got 2 more laughs out of it just by embellishing. Well, of course I don't want Lori to get hurt. She gets hurt. Who's going to do the laundry? Everybody laughs, including her, and now you've just found your 4th punchline. Also, as Tim pointed out, don't ever test new material in your first 5 minutes. You sandwich that stuff in there at about the 20-minute mark when you've already got that crowd juiced and warm, and some people say, yeah, man, that show was great. Now, during the middle, it kind of got a little soft. It got a little soft in the middle because I was trying out 7 minutes of new stuff in the middle right there. So, that's your question.
I think to expand that whole question is, I don't think people realize what it takes to write a signature bit or a joke that's going to hit across the board every time you walk into a new crowd. You know, it's one thing to tell a joke to your buddies in a bar, but it's something different when you walk into a room of 300, 700, 800 people that you don't know a thing about, and you got to make every one of them laugh. And sometimes it can literally take a year or two to get a bit right. I mean, I'm working on a bit right now for the Tonight Show that's a true story about when I hit it out, or car in front of me hit an alligator, and I put the alligator in my Bronco, and about 5 miles, I thought it was dead. About 5 miles down the road, it came to life. Now, I've been working on this bit for 6 months, and it's probably going to take me another 6 months to get it right, because am I right, Damien? It can take a year sometimes to get. Now, every once in a while, you might get that one joke where you thought about it on the plane, and then you get there and you say it, and you're like, whoa. If it was always like that, this would be the easiest profession around. But nine times out of ten, it doesn't.
We just watched, I like football, so I'll go back to football. You watched Tom Brady last night. Tom Brady's 40 years old. Has he lost a bit of a step physically? Probably. My God, he's 40 years old. But do you think that because he's got, 16, 17 years of the experience of being rushed by 300-pound guys that are 6'5" that can go a 4.440, do you think he's better at the decision-making or the experience than he was when he was 23 and was a touch faster, stronger? Probably so. Tim and I, over the years, I've got a bit that Bert has heard where I talk about horse people. Now, even horse people laugh at this, because they're raising their hand and they're going like this and they're spitting out their drink and they're saying, oh my God, that's me. The way it's funny is that it's endearing, even though it's somewhat insulting to horse people. But I have told that story and made that into a bit. It's one of my signature bits, joking about horse people. And I have made that probably twice as funny just in the last year than it was 3 years ago or 4 years ago when I launched it. And because of the repetition and the time of using that material, and what you do is you take what was a 3 minute bit and you make it down to a 2 minute bit, retaining the 5 punchlines you had at 3 minutes, you still got them in 2 minutes and you add 2 more. So you took 3 minutes, made it 2 minutes, and took it from 5 joke punchlines to 7. That's where you get really good with your material. And as Tim pointed out, people have no idea. It takes repetition and time in front of an audience to do that. So imagine you're at the Flint Hills Beef Fest, which is a gig that I did a few years ago, rocked the room, 1,000 people at a fairgrounds, hard venue to work because there's a beer trailer in the back, cowboys, noise, get the crowd rocking, rolling, just absolutely kill the thing. And then you're doing the thing afterwards and people come up and getting buying T-shirts off you. Because as I should point out, I sell these T-shirts. And some guy comes up and says, hey, that's real funny. You know, I sometimes go to like my local co-op meeting, and I'm going to just take some of that material and get up and use it. And you might want to knock him on his ass. That's 5 years of my hard work that you think you should just be able to steal. I'll tell you what. Great. I'll come over and just use your pickup truck for the next couple of years, and you can use my material. That's a bit what Tim's talking about.
It can be nerve-wracking at times, too. If you, like Damien talked about shortening down the bit, because, it's one thing if you're doing a motivational speech, but if you're trying to be funny, you're going for laughs per minute. And you kind of got to take the fluff. I mean, we all... To put it in layman's terms, if you've ever had somebody just come up, hey, I want to tell you a joke, and it's a long, drawn-out story, and finally, after 5 minutes that you're never going to get back, they tell you the punchline, and you're like, you can't do that on stage. People will walk out, And I would walk out, because I have the attention span of a rock, and I'm like, get to the point.
So you work on your stories, you hone them, like you said, you put a lot of time and effort into it. What do you do when one bombs? I mean, what do you do when you fall on your face? How do you recover and how do you retool?
Am I going first again, Damien? All right. I've gotten to where if it bombs, I can play it off. I'll say, well, some of these are just for me. This is part of my community service. You're going to bomb. I mean, I don't know how many shows I do a year, but as soon as you think, I'm rocking this week, I'm doing good. Trust me, that next show you will eat it bad, and It's part of the game, man. I don't
probably nobody realizes, and there's a part that in the business of speaking, talking, comedy delivery, they always say this. There's three speeches. There's the one you intend to give, there's the one you give, and there's the one you wish like hell on the way home you had given. Okay?
So that ride home can be brutal sometimes.
And so I go back to my hotel room, and I'm sure Tim does this also. First off, I worry a little bit about the next generation. They tell me the millennials are amazingly confident to where they're almost arrogant about their own abilities, even though they have not got a lot of experience. I'm not bashing on that generation. I'm just going to talk about a personality thing that one needs. They can say, well, you need a short memory because you didn't do well yesterday in front of that crowd in Kansas City. Guess what? You're on the plane, and then you're on the ground, and tonight or tomorrow, you're in Charlotte, and it's a different crowd. You better forget a little bit about what happened. But if you are too arrogant, you're going to forget and think, nah, man, it was all them, not me. Bullshit. You better sit down with yourself, sit down with your material, and say, what went wrong? How can I get better? Because I still, at age 48, am getting better. I don't know when I'll get to my best, but I can tell you that it's because you go back to the hotel room and you go through it. I'm sure Tim does this also. And I look at my outline and I say, all right, I tried out new material here. It hit at about a B-plus level, but I think it's because it needs punched up. It needs shortened. This little line didn't go well. But why didn't this work over here? What did I do wrong? So you kind of actually, I think a lot of people in the business of professional comedy, professional humor delivery, are probably very self-critical. And probably you need to be.
Do you find that the conservative nature of agriculture audiences is more difficult than other audiences, or do they kind of roll the same as everybody else?
Damien and I, neither one of us would be, you know, neither one of us are considered dirty comics. You know, I could be very easily, but I control myself. There are times I'm in a club where, you know, I'm off my medication, and those are fun nights for me. Thank God nobody tapes it. But as far as the conservative crowd, I think all the agriculture groups are conservative to begin with. I don't think it's really a problem for us. I will say this, as long as I've been doing this, this happened to me Saturday night. I was in, Nebraska, 1,000 people, and I had those people doubled over. I was scheduled to do 45 minutes. They wouldn't let me leave. I did an hour and 20, which I never do that because you've overstepped your stay, but they wouldn't let me leave. I sold a pile of shirts. It was like a rock concert in there, and there was one woman that came up to me and voiced her opinion about a couple of my jokes. And I don't care how long Damien and I have done this. My mom used to say, you can't please everybody all the time. And there's always somebody in the group that's there that was not happy before they ever met us. But they're in there and they're just the whole time. And don't want to laugh. And I don't know how I got off on this when you asked me about conservative, but I think some people are just too dang conservative and they don't laugh. And eventually they're going to fart if they don't laugh because you're holding that in. And there's always one person in there. Don't you have this, Damien? There's always one person. That person was miserable before they ever got to the show.
I'll give you a great example. To absolutely. First off, we absolutely are PG-13. I say the word hell, and I do a couple of innuendo jokes. Cleaner than if you sat down with your family and watched a TV show on at 8 p.m., my show is cleaner than that. Even if I'm on at 9 p.m. in front of 300 ragingly drunk ag seed salesmen, I'm still going to be PG-13. The word hell is as raunchy as it gets. Okay, maybe ass. But again, watch the 8 p.m. TV, clear that. Nothing worse than hell, nothing worse than ass, nothing worse than an innuendo joke about artificial insemination or very, very clean stuff. But as Tim pointed out, the thing that's aggravating, what will end up making me happily walk away from the racket, I've been doing this for 24 years. What will end up making me walk away from the racket is you work really hard as a service provider. They don't appreciate that you're back in your hotel room cranking out and looking at that and saying, man, what can I do better? Because you really take it very seriously. This is something that's my craft. It's my pride. It's my business. It's how I, you know, have a winter home in Arizona. I've worked hard at this. But what's frustrating, and we all get this, is a meeting planner that doesn't have spine. A meeting planner that hires us, and we rock that room. And we've done everything you could ever ask for. You make 500 or 1,000 people fall out of their chairs. And two people come up to that meeting planner and bitch. Now, they would bitch whether it was Diet Coke that was 3 degrees too warm or whether the chicken was chicken cordon bleu and they thought it should have been a chicken breast. They're going to complain about something, but they will decide to complain about Tim or I, because when you are funny and have an opinion, you become a target. And so that meeting planner will, instead of saying, you know what, you would have complained no matter what. I've got 2 out of 500 are complaining. That is a 99.5%. I didn't do that all completely right, but remember, I just took math 161 and 220. Help me out here, professor. But anyway, any professional meeting planner that has a spine should say, you're the best thing we've ever had. But some of them listen to the complainer and don't put that in perspective, and then we get the brunt of it. And that's the frustrating part about the business.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And that, Damien and I could spend hours talking about stories and stuff, but we don't have that kind of time. Maybe we should do another one of these, and it's just me and Damien ranting.
No, in general, you love the business. In general, yeah. you love the audiences. What's frustrating is you do an event. I have one in February, 400 people in that room, 4 complainers. That's 1%. 1%. 4 people that didn't like my sense of humor out of 400. And what's a meeting planner do? Decide that I was too edgy. What was I edgy about? Some commentary. This is no kidding. Commentary on the grocery business. Wasn't even my comedy material they objected to.
I'm gonna put this in perspective for the beef guys. All right, you're loading up a semi. You've got a semi load full of beef calves you're sending off. They're all 400-pound beef calves. You get the truck pretty much full, and there's 2 calves that won't go in the loading chute. And while you're trying to get them in the loading chute, they bust through 2 fences, but they're still in the pen, and then they kick you in the nads. And then they run over you, they break your hot shot, and you finally jump out of the pen and you don't get them on the truck. Although everything went good up until that one calf, that's the calf you remember, because it's like dating. You never remember the nice people. You remember the crazy ones. Those are the ones where you remember the crazy ones. I'm sorry if he's running off like this.
Hey, you guys, since I don't know how much time they want us to fill, but I can talk about this all day. Probably the listeners are saying, I don't know, this is kind of interesting. I thought normally we talk about sexed semen, but today we got these 2 funny guys on there. So hopefully we're a little more entertaining than sexed semen. But anyway, I'll give you a great example.
You know what, Damon? There's going to be somebody complaining about this podcast right now. There's going to be one person be like, well, I didn't want to hear all that, you know.
I wanted to hear about sex semen. Well, that's all right. I'll give you a great example. You guys can appreciate this because we are, after all, Beef Magazine. I got the Beef Extension Specialist at Purdue University on here. I think, you know what, since we've been doing most of the talking, we should throw it back and announce that we indeed have my good friends, I'm going to get their names right, Ron Lemmeninger and Burt Rutherford on the show with us today, Tim. Even though it's their show, we might as well just start, you know, announcing them.
Yeah. Hey, let's let both of them, they should both tell their favorite joke. I'm waiting to hear Burt's.
Okay.
My favorite joke, I use this every time I get up in front of an audience when I'm using PowerPoint, because I am a technological nincompoop. and I will hit the wrong button somewhere along the way. And so when I do that, I say, you know, I am a source of continual entertainment to my children. Okay.
Where's the punchline?
So, what's the punchline? The crowd always laughs. See, unfunny people laugh at me. Funny people don't get me.
Hey, actually, funny people don't laugh at themselves either. After enough years in this business, you get... Professor Ron, do you got a joke for us?
No, I don't have a good one. There is no way I could even live up to Bert's story. So
here's the thing. Here's the thing that Mr. Moffitt and I'll both tell you, because he already touched on it. He talked about when people tell jokes. The hard part about funny is that a lot of people that aren't expected to be funny, the bar is really low. And I'm not being mean, but obviously nobody expects the editor of Beef Magazine to come in and have him yucking for 40 minutes. He's a pretty serious guy. So he doesn't come in and have him yucking 40 minutes. His bar is a little lower, and that's fine. It would be a mistake for him to think when they give that laugh that he's going to then get 40 more minutes of laughter, because then it's going to be like, hey, wait, this was kind of funny once. You made a self-effacing joke when you struggled with the technology, but now let's get serious. We don't have that luxury. We're supposed to be funny throughout, repeat, repeat, repeat. But the death of comedy for most people, and it's the same thing with storytelling, is belabored setups. I told you already what I call compression. Jerry Seinfeld calls efficiency, where you take 3 minutes and squish it into a minute and a half, still retaining the point, the perspective, the point of view, and more importantly, the punchlines. And if you can take 3 minutes, squeeze in a minute and a half through what I call compression, and then retain all those and even add a couple more funnies. That's the thing. The average person tells their joke and they say, okay, I got this joke. Okay. A midget and a rabbi and a dinosaur. And Okay. So they go into a bar and then there's a purple headed, giraffe, and they give 19 details that are completely impertinent to the punchline. The punchline is that a nun was drunk and went home with a sailor. You don't need it to be a purple-headed giraffe that was a bartender. So people always put unnecessary details. If you think about stories, one little point for your listeners, maybe they're invited to do a presentation at the Chamber of Commerce about their beef enterprise, or maybe they're invited to talk about something. Only use funny if you're funny. Don't belabor the setup and give unnecessary peripheral details. That's the death of most people's storytelling and humor, and Tim would agree that it doesn't need to be 19 different adjectives. It just needs to be the ones that are pertinent and get to the point.
Take out the fluff.
Give me an example, both of you. Give me a good shot, okay? It doesn't have to be your best. Give me a good one.
On what thing?
You pick a funny.
Huh?
Make me laugh.
All right. I hate when people do that to comedians. I hate when people tell me a joke, funny man.
Hey, I've got a good one. I always tell people when people meet me, I'm pretty actually quiet. I talk to you guys, and I talk when I'm on a stage. But when I travel, I don't talk. I talk only when I'm with my client or when I'm on the stage. I'm actually pretty introverted. My wife makes a point all the time. She says, people have this idea because of what you do. You're probably just running around, dropping material, talking to people in the Dallas airport. I don't talk. I'm pretty reserved. But, you know, after 24 years, it used to be this thing where people would say, hey, I heard you're a comedian, because I started out doing political comedy back in the old days. That was what I did for years. I was a political comedian. And then they always go, hey, you're a political comedian. Say something funny. I'd say, well, what do you do? Well, I run an asphalt business. I said, I'll tell you what. You come over and pave my driveway, and I'll walk next to the paver, and I'll do my whole show the whole damn time you're paving my driveway for free. I'll give you all the material you want. All right, here's a couple of things that we do for agriculture. I talk a lot about farm camp. Bert's been in my audience. He probably knows this. The reason it works, they talk about comedy theory. You've got a little bit of a contradictory. So you're in front of the audience that gets agriculture. So you say, all right, you know what? We need more in society. We need more agricultural learning. We don't need soccer camps because everybody knows whether they're ag or not, we have too many soccer camps. Everybody can talk about soccer in the suburbs. We don't need more soccer camps. We need a thing called farm camp. There, I just set the premise. Talked about condensing and compressing. I just set the premise. We don't need soccer camps, and it gives me a chance to get two jokes about soccer. You know, they're playing soccer in the suburbs. They don't even keep score. Soccer is boring when they do keep score. And, you know, then you get – that's your light laugh. If you get a light laugh in your entry, in your segue or your transition from the thing before, you've got them going already. So we need a thing called farm camp. Farm camp, city and urban – suburban kids learn what you and I learned growing up. Crowd sitting there thinking, what did I learn growing up? Like, how to drive a pickup at age 7. Why you shouldn't tease the bull. Safety shields on machinery are just recommendations. If you know that lesson from farm camp, you know four old men who are missing fingers. So you get the crowd going through this rapid fire. It's a bit like Jeff Foxworthy, whereas you might be a redneck. You might be a redneck. These are the things that I do on farm camp. You know, and then you get one that's a little bit naughtier. Farm camp, you learn those electric fence stories are not made up. Crowd laughs. You don't believe it? Go pee on the fence, kid. We'll watch. That's as raunchy as we'll get. We just got 5 laughs, and it took us about 1 minute to get those 5 laughs. So, again, laughs per minute, as Tim alluded to, matters. You get to a segment like farm camp, it's relatable, it's funny, it's fast.
All right, Ron, I got one for you. It took me 7 years to write this joke, okay? What does a cow with no lips say? Oh! Because there's... All
right. See? That's kind of like the joke about the dog with 3 legs, 2 legs, and no legs.
Yeah, and those are jokes that people tell to one another. Remember, the kind of stuff that people tell in the barnyard or at the bar are a guy walks into a bar. And the kind of stuff that Tim and I do is not a guy walks into a bar kind of stuff. It's typically more, you know, your crowd doesn't want you to get up there and do jokes like that. I make the crack all the time. This is something I do that helps bridge the gap no matter where you are regionally. Okay? Working in Canada or Cancun for a sales meeting that goes there or Florida or Sacramento. It don't matter because you can do the regional thing no matter what your crowd is. You do a few jokes, them going all this, you're laughing and they're having a good time. And you say, by the way, maybe you said something about the geography or the people there. And then you get off the hook by saying, hey, I don't mean any offense here. Let's face it, we're a very diverse crowd. In fact, I need to give you my one racial joke. You want to hear my racial joke, my one ethnic joke? Now, right there, the crowd gets a little bit uncomfortable. Steve Martin used to talk about the punchline is really the release of pressure from making the crowd a little bit uncomfortable. Remember, Steve Martin did stuff that was off the wall weird to where finally, after a minute and a half, you do something that was funny, and there'd be a big relief. So now I've talked about racial humor, which is inappropriate, and the crowd's looking around, and I've said it 3 times. You know, you want to hear my one ethnic joke? It's about myself. You see, coming up in comedy, you've got to do ethnic material about yourself. My ethnic joke's no good, though. I'm English, Irish, and French, which means I take over the country, get drunk, start a fight, and surrender. So that's funny because you're still allowed to make jokes about your own ethnicity, especially if it's English, Irish, and French, and it also has a historical context. So anyway, there's some examples for you, but yeah. You use that as filler between stories that have – that gets you 2 laughs or 1, but now you just sandwich that in basically as a segue from something over here about them to now – me, and I'll tell you this story. So speaking of my background, boom, boom, and you go through your story. That gets you a 3-minute bit.
Do you ever speak to non-ag audiences? And if or when you do you find yourself becoming an advocate for agriculture?
I do. I still do a few clubs occasionally. Probably more than Damien does just because I'm working on material here and there. But, you know, I normally ask, who grew up on a farm? And there'll be nobody. I'll be like, you know, how many of y'all grown up on a farm? How many of y'all ever driven by a farm? You know, went to the produce section. You know, it just kind of, you have to work them into it. Normally when I say I'm a dairy farmer, nobody, you know, says nothing. And then I'll make the comment about them being vegans and too weak to raise their hand. But, yeah, I do get people to come up after the show occasionally. For instance, when you're on a plane, people ask you what you do or whatever, and then they'll want to know about, I do get the one about hormones and beef, and I'll have to explain to them that it legally, if you're not allowed to put hormones in anything we eat, then there's a label from the FDA, you know, right on the thing there. And just because it says no hormones, they're getting another 75 cents a pound out of you. And, you know, there's just a lot of false stuff, and I explain what I can. But as far as doing ag comedy in front of regular crowds, I don't know. Like we said in the beginning, funny's funny, you know. How about you, Danny?
Yeah, I think that I do non-ag events. One thing that I discovered a few years ago was that some folks that are completely removed from ag, I do another sort of program for small, it's really geared to small business people. It's about reinvention. So it's got a little bit of tie into what I do because I'm still funny, but it's a business oriented presentation. I can talk a little bit about agriculture, but it's not the time or the place when I'm doing that program to be a advocate for the business of food and fuel and fiber and farming. It's just kind of a different thing. When I'm in front of ag crowds, absolutely you can talk positively about agriculture. The thing is, this got real popular here a few years ago. You're supposed to be an advocate. And one thing that I think, and you guys see it too, we almost get to where we preach to the choir a little bit too much, where it's ag people talking positively about ag to ag. And I'd say, all right, we get that. So actually some of my program, I tell them, you know, I'm all Mr. Pro Ag. I'm modern ag. I'm got a degree in agricultural economics. I own a farm. I just bought the home farm where I was raised. I'm all in. But we need to admit that whether we're all in or not doesn't matter, because we still got to answer to the consumer, which is 93% of the non-ag involved, you know, world here in the United States. So yeah, I guess so. One thing that I also discovered, you know, I travel 130 days a year, and I live part-time in Arizona. I live part-time at the farm. I got lots of non-ag associates, friends. They almost come to you on the side because they think you're, even though you're a comedy guy, you have credibility. So I get that a lot. Tim Pry does too. Like he talked about hormones where they say, hey, I was reading this thing, or I was at, and sometimes I always can get them straightened out right there. I was at yoga with this woman, and she said that on Dr. Oz. And I said, I think we've just about got the problem solved right there. I was at yoga with a woman who said she saw on Dr. Oz. Now continue. And then it'll be something ridiculous about the reason my kids' feet are big is because of the hormones in the milk. And you were raised on a dairy farm, so tell me about that. So you go through the actual data and whatnot. And I came up with this whole agriculture because starvation sucks thing in like 2010. The reason, I was already doing ag crowds, and there was the big push then about, we've got to educate our consumer. We've got to educate our consumer. And I started making the point, that's fine. But you know what? Our consumer might be uneducable. So instead of telling them about the science of hormones, the science behind the fact that we actually do not put hormones in the chicken feeders, instead of all that, let's just make it simple and a soundbite. You know why I'm pro-agriculture? Because the alternative sucks. And so that's why we do the nutshell. It's a little easier that way.
So if I was sitting next to you on the plane, okay, and I think maybe you alluded to this here just a minute ago, but what would be sitting by you on the plane feel like? I mean, I when I travel, you know, you visit with whoever's next to you, and sometimes they want to interact, sometimes they don't. Sometimes you leave them alone, sometimes you don't. Whatever. But
I'm a definite non-interactor. I'll sit there and read the Wall Street Journal and probably various other publications to keep myself abreast. I think one thing that Tim and I need to do is always stay abreast of what's happening. When you're a professional comedian, you're a professional observer. And being a professional observer means keeping up with your people, society, and what's going on. I'm pretty boring to travel with. I'll be reading a lot, and I'll have my laptop out, and I'll be working on an article or doing business. One other thing, if you sit next to me on an airplane versus sitting next to Tim, you'll have more room if you sit next to me. He's obviously a bigger guy.
I was going to say that because I know normally before I get on a plane, I like to eat at least 3 bean burritos. And I like to sit in the middle seat so everybody around me gets some rapid fire while we're traveling. But I'm feeling like Damien, though. I think the couple times I have been asked, it's always like, what do you do? I'm like, I'm a dairy farmer, and, I'm from Florida. And they're like, well, there's cows in Florida? I'm like, yeah, everybody that comes down from up north when they retire has to bring one. But I try to, I'll talk to people when I can to educate them. I've told several people that, in the dairy part where they ask about, I'm lactose intolerant. And I'll explain to them that quit drinking 1% and skim. Drink whole milk. And I've actually got emails back from people where, I explain to them how the food processors dilute it like a cocaine dealer. And, if they would just stick with whole milk, that they wouldn't have these issues. But there again, I'm going off on a, like Damien just said, like an advocate thing. We got to educate the consumers. Yeah. But is that my job? Probably not. I don't think you guys want me at the beef organization yelling at vegetarians, because somebody's going to get sued if it's my job, probably, because I said too much.
I point out pretty commonly, speaking of material, I've been doing material about vegetarians for like 9 years. I do it once in a while still if I was in front of a beef crowd. I point out a couple of very simple things. I always ask anybody in the crowd, I say, are there any vegetarians in the crowd? And then I say, you're going to be offended. But the good thing that I've learned in making jokes about vegetarians, I can offend you all day long. None of you have enough strength to throw a punch.
And I normally say, I just ran into a vegetarian last week with my truck. It was Krispy Kreme. So, anyway.
You
think we're going to air this or not? Just scrap this whole project, or what are we going to do?
Hey, I'll tell you one thing. You guys wanted to cover the business. Probably your listeners are saying, man, there's more to this than I thought. And I guess that's the one thing when we were asked to do this, that Tim and I both tell you. It's one thing. We both come up doing this. There's always somebody. I took class at Second City 8 years into my career when I was going through a reset after I was about done being a political comedian. And I was up there at Chicago studying improv and writing and all this. And I had already made a lot of money being funny on a stage, not being arrogant, just that was the deal. And there were a whole bunch of people that were there. And it was all new to them. They had never sat down in their hotel room and reworked a bit after it just did a B- or a C+ right there on the stage that night. And they were funny because their aunt at Thanksgiving, when they said something funny, said, oh my goodness, you should be in stand-up. Oh, you're so funny. And there's a whole bunch of those people that we both have seen. The separation is, it's just a bit like your listeners. Oh, you talk about being an advocate. Oh, I run into this all the time. I'd love to have a little backyard chicken flock. Oh, I'm going to start gardening. I raise all my own food. You raise all your own food? You live on 1/8 of an acre in the suburbs. How the hell do you know what? You weigh 213 pounds. I don't think you're raising all your own food. So we've run across this in our travels. If you say, I don't usually tell them I'm an ag comedy guy or an ag speaker. I just say, oh, I'm self-employed. But sometimes it's like, and sometimes you're on planes with people that were at the conference you just did a talk for yesterday. So, it becomes like, oh, yeah, this is Damien. He's a guy on stage. But I find it interesting that the folks that think that they can raise their own food because they have an herb garden, a window box with some parsley in it, and they have 2 hens laying, an egg and a half per day, they convince themselves they know about agriculture. It's a little bit like the business we're in. Just because you at Thanksgiving made the dinner table of your relatives who like you laugh doesn't mean that this is probably something that you are going to be able to professionally sustain.
you put together 16 or 24 years of making your living at this, it's work, just like producing beef. Oh, yeah, I know a lot about agriculture because I grew some carrots last week. Well, no, you don't. I make that crack all the time. By age 12 on the dairy farm, I was in charge of the bottle calves from the time I was 8. Probably by age 12, I had produced more calories for human consumption than this idiot out here in the suburbs with their carrots and their two hens will if they live to be 100 with their two hens and their carrot operation. It's just the reality of it. So there's always a lot more work behind the scenes. The dairy farmer knows that. The beef farmer knows that. The ag humor person knows that. And now your listeners know that.
Gentlemen, where are you going to be performing in the next couple of months? Tell us that. Tell us how people can engage your services and kind of what your future plans are.
I'm in Iowa twice, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan. I'm doing pork, dairy, Nashville farmers. I think somebody invited me to Michigan just to play a joke on me. I hope it's really a show.
I got one worse than that, buddy. I've got New Brunswick. I'm going to be doing potato people in New Brunswick. And if you've never been to, I mean, it's way up there. Imagine north and east of Maine. So, yeah, I've got that. Wintertime is a busy time for ag because a lot of ag conferences. But you know what? Your people want to call and see if I'm open. By golly, I'm always willing to take a paid date on the calendar and just stay on the road. January, February, March are really busy times. I've actually got a trip out tomorrow, Marco Island, Florida, then Iowa for some pork meetings. I'm going back to my home state of Indiana. Then we hit the road starting in about mid-January when the conference season kicks off. DamianMason.com is my website. You can find me on Twitter, at Damian P. Mason, Damian Mason Professional Speaker on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm easy to find, D-A-M-I-A-N, Mason like a bricklayer. Tim, how should these people find you?
I got all the same stuff. Mine's TimTheDairyFarmer.com or TimMoffitt.com or AgComedian.com. If you can remember one of those, they all go to the...
These people should be keeping up with us anyhow. If you keep up with my stuff, you'll see the people that don't like me that fight with me on social media, which I always make the joke. The era of social media, these people think that typing with capital letters equates to a fight. Oh, it's like, oh, not that. They put the all caps and they put exclamation points. Woohoo! They called me names. It's funny. People that don't like modern agriculture say I'm a shill for factory food and all that, but that's part of it. So keep up with my stuff online. Keep up with Tim. You'll see some funny stuff. We put material out. I put videos out. I have a good time with it. I really appreciate you guys having us on here.
Yeah, it's been good. You made me laugh, Bert.
When? I want to watch it.
Do you think we could do this again sometime? Do you think that somehow we can come back and talk? We didn't even talk about, that many beef topics. No, we covered a lot of stuff. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, we did. Any last comments that you guys want to make, leave our readers and listeners with?
Keep doing what you're doing, I guess. Call Damien and I for shows. That'd be good. That'd be my last word.
I was going to say, wait a minute. Keep doing what you're doing and then call us because this is how we make it. This is what we do. Obviously, we both enjoy it. We enjoy these crowds. When you're going to Saskatoon and New Brunswick and Grand Rapids, Michigan in Madison, Wisconsin in January, obviously you like what you do. Granted, that's how you make some money, but it's also enjoyable. Crowds are fun. Enjoy the people. It's been good working with the people of agriculture. It really is. And the good thing is, it's kind of like a small fraternity. Ag people, there's only 1% that farm, 7% that are peripherally involved. It's a small fraternity, but it's a fraternity that seems to get one another, and that's the good part about serving the industry that we serve.
Yeah, I'd agree.
It's been fun for me. I enjoy what I do. I know Damien enjoys what he does. Heck, I think the two of us should do a show together sometime. That'd be a hoot. I mean, I got an improv background, too, so we wouldn't even write material. We just ask a few questions and go from there.
Obviously, well, these guys turned their podcast to us over to us, and they missed. We just gave them 54 minutes of stuff, and half the time I thought that maybe the one guy's camera wasn't working because he's just sitting there looking at us. I thought he's like on a still or something.
Well, it's too bad the listeners weren't able to hear the banter before we begin the recording, because it was improv at its finest. Damien, Tim, with an I, thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That about wraps us up for this edition of Beef Roundtable. All of us involved in the Beef Roundtable with Beef Magazine, Purdue University, wish you a very safe and happy holiday season.